You know, over 100 years ago, one of the world's greatest writers understood that his logic led him to go where logic can't take him. See what I mean? I had very logical reasons for believing in things that logic and reason could never teach me. It's kind of ironic, but the more complexity science finds in life, the less likely becomes the whole scenario in theory they use to explain its origin. The really amazing thing is that quantum physics shows that nature, at its most fundamental level, strains human credulity and knowledge in ways biblical faith never does. Greetings, Cliff Goldstein here. Welcome to the program. You know, I grew up in my home. We read the Russian novelist Fyodor Dostoevsky, just Crime and Punishment and so on, and The Brothers Karamazov, The Idiot. I read all those novels, and I used to see books by fellow Russian Leo Tolstoy, but I never read them. I think the size of the book scared me off. My goodness, have you ever seen the size of War and Peace? I mean, it was just very big. Well, anyway, a number of years ago, my wife, for my birthday or something, bought me a book of short stories by Leo Tolstoy. And the first one I read was called How Much Land Does a Man Need? And she tells the story of this guy who's tired of life and he wants to go somewhere else. And he comes to this land of the Baskers. And they tell him if he walks all day as far as he walks around, that's all the land he could have. As far as he could walk, he could have that land. As long as he makes sure he's back where he started before the sun sets. So this guy goes, man, this is good news. I'm going to get me a lot of land. And so he walks and walks and walks and walks and he goes around and he's just, man, he's fantasizing about the farms and all he's going to have. And he's walking and walking and walking. And then he suddenly says, whoa, wait a minute. If I don't get back here in time, I'm going to run out. The sun's coming down. So he runs and runs and runs. And anyway, right before he gets there, he doesn't make it and he collapses and he dies. And Tolstoy ends the story. The title was How Much Land Does a Man Need? And Tolstoy ends it with the line, about 6 feet is all that he needed. And I thought, wow, I love that story. And so I got converted to Tolstoy. And I read War and Peace and Anna Karenina and so on. I mean, Tolstoy was arguably, when alive, perhaps the greatest novelist, the greatest writer of the 19th century. Anyway, what happened was he gets later in life and he goes through this existential crisis in middle age, suddenly says, what was the purpose of his life? What was the meaning of life in general? You know, how can life mean anything when death takes it all? You know, he wrote this powerful and very, really depressing short story called The Death of Ivan Illich. And the theme really comes through in this very, you know, his morbid fear of death. And it's not so much the fear of dying and the pain, though he didn't like that, but it's the fear of what did death do to the meaning of his life in general. You know, he had a brother who died in his arms from tuberculosis. And this really started bringing to this guy the painful reality of death and what death meant, you know, and especially with his own brother, brought this closer to home. Anyway, Tolstoy wrote a powerful essay. and it was called, I think it's called, yeah, I wrote, Call the Confession, which kind of documented his spiritual and intellectual journey. And in it, he tells about how as a young man, he lost his Christian faith entirely, just threw it out. In fact, like many people in his day and age, he believed in the idea of progress. This was a very common theme in the 1800s. Mankind was going to progress, you know, and progress himself right into a state of pure utopia. You know, this was the Enlightenment, the ideals of human perfection, human progress. Mankind was on an upward path. Science and reason and technology were going to pave the way for humanity to rid itself of all the things that made life so miserable here now. This quote from Queen Victoria's chaplain, Charles Kinsey, written before the end of the 19th century. Listen to this quote. Just listen. Think about what he's saying here. The railroad, Cunard's liners, and the electric telegraph are signs that we are, on some points at least, in harmony with the universe. That there is a mighty spirit working among us, the ordering and creating God. Men and women, more than ever before or since, felt at home on earth and in control of their destiny. Oh, man. I think this was the end of the 1800s. Okay. And then here, on December 31st, 1899, the end of the 1800s, the New York Times ran an editorial. It says, tomorrow we enter upon the last year of a century that is marked by greater progress in all that pertains to the well-being and enlightenment of mankind than in all that had been seen in all the previous history of the race. Okay. Again, this is entering into the 20th century. Nothing it seemed could stop the progress that many of those years believed were getting ready for mankind to create heaven on earth. Capturing the mood, poet Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, let man stand erect, go alone, and possess the universe. Wow, possess the universe. My, they were optimists, weren't they? Anyway, that was the kind of ideal that was spurring Tolstoy on. Okay, that's the thinking. But then, what happened? Well, Tolstoy himself tells us in the confession. He writes, so for instance, during my stay in Paris, the sight of an execution revealed to me the instability of my superstitious belief in progress. When I saw the head part from the body and how they thumped separately into the box, I understood, not with my mind, but with my whole being, that no theory of reasonableness of the presence of our present progress could justify this deed. Okay, that decapitation, the guillotining, that just turned him off to the whole idea that mankind was progressing. Others became disillusioned too. Let me read you this quote here from one of the most famous personalities of his time, the Irish poet George Bernard Shaw. Here's what he wrote. The science to which I pinned my faith is bankrupt. Its councils, which should have established the millennium, led instead directly to the suicide of Europe. It is, I believe them once. In their name, I helped to destroy the faith of millions of worshipers in the temples of 1,000 creeds. And now they look to me and witness the great tragedy of an atheist who lost his faith. In other words, all the great hope of science to save us, that science was creating bombs and weapons and killing humans as never killed before. You know, probably you guys don't know the name David Hahn. And maybe you would know it if I told you the moniker. He was called the Radioactive Boy Scout. Anyway, this is an amazing story. It happened years ago. Some 15-year-old kid in the suburbs of Detroit, he wanted to get an atomic energy badge for the Boy Scouts. So what does this kid, this whiz kid, do? This kid, on his own, builds a breeder nuclear reactor in his own backyard. He managed to get all that he needed, this kid, you know, to do it. Okay, by the time he was done, you know, in 1995, the federal government hauled away and buried deep underground the nuclear contraption that this kid in his backyard built that put the 40,000 residents of his town at risk. And I guess the question is, if a 15-year-old kid 25, 30 years ago could do that, where does that put us today? Wonder what happens when the new leaders of Afghanistan get a hold of some of this technology. Anyway, the point is, people at the beginning of the 20th century were quite optimistic about the future. Dare I say, we who are now in the 21st year of the 21st century, I don't think we share that optimism for the future, do we? I know I certainly don't. Now, of course, Tolstoy didn't know all of this stuff, but still, he didn't need to. He started even back then seeing that this great hope that humanity itself is gonna solve all our problems, that hope got stymied. So he started, at least in science, he saw it wasn't gonna. So he started looking, well, maybe there's somewhere I'm gonna find some hope, he thought. Okay, so he looked to philosophy, he looked to science, he looked to art, to all kind of human knowledge. It made me think of Goethe's Faust, who went around looking for answers in all the human endeavors and so on. And in the end, Tolstoy couldn't find an answer. Not for a life that ends in death. This is what he writes. I sought in all the branches of knowledge, but far from finding what I wanted, I became convinced that all who, like myself, sought knowledge for the meaning of life had found nothing. And not only had they found nothing, but they plainly acknowledged that the very thing which made me despair, the senselessness of life, is the one indubitable thing man could know. In other words, the only thing we could know is how meaningless life really is. And here's the thing. Tolstoy reaches this nadir when he had pretty much everything that a human being in this world could want. Let me read you what he wrote. He said, and all this befell me at a time when all around me I had what is considered complete good fortune. I was not yet 50. I had a wife who loved me, good children, and whom I loved, and a large estate without which much effort on my part improved and increased. I was respected by my relations and my acquaintances more than any previous time. I was praised by others, and without much self-deception could consider that my name was famous. And far from being insane or mentally diseased, I enjoyed, on the contrary, a strength of mind and body such as I have seldom met with among men of my kind. Physically, I could keep up with the peasants and at mowing, and mentally, I could work for 8-10 hours at a stretch without experiencing any ill results from my exertion. And in this situation, I came to this, that I could not live, and fearing death, had to employ cunning with myself to avoid taking my own life. In other words, with everything he had, he got so depressed that he actually thought about suicide. And here are a few more snippets from what he said. He writes, "The truth is that life is meaningless." And then he said, "Today or tomorrow, sickness and death will come to those whom I love or to me. Nothing will remain but stench and worms. And then I shall be gone and forgotten and shall not exist. Then why going on making any effort? How can man fail to see this? And how go on living? How to go on living? This is what's surprising. One can live while intoxicated with life, and as soon as one is sober, it is impossible not to see that it is all a mere fraud and a stupid fraud, that it is precisely what it is. There is nothing either amusing or witty about it. It is simply cruel and stupid." And he's talking about life, life in general, not just his life. And he says, "What will come of what I do today or tomorrow? What will come of my entire life? What will, expressed another way, the question can be put like this: why do I live? What do I wish for anything or to do anything? Or expressed another way, is there any meaning in my life that will not be annihilated by the inevitability of death, which awaits me?" Wow. The point is, Tolstoy saw that all the world and everything in the world didn't answer the basic problem of life. In a sense, the world isn't the answer. In a sense, the world is the problem, because the world swallows up everything in death. You have to, in other words, you have to find a truth that transcends this world, that's above this world, because it's this world and all that's in it that eventually gets swallowed up into oblivion, right? I mean, folks, you don't need to be a Bible believer to see that. I mean, science teaches this. Science writer Paul Davies said, "One day the universe is going to burn out and the era of light will be over." So what does Tolstoy do? He wrote, "It followed that rational knowledge does not provide the meaning of life, but excludes it." He goes, "Rational knowledge had led me to recognize that life is meaningless. My life came to a halt and I wanted to kill myself." Now think about what he's saying here. He's saying rational knowledge leads him to this. So what does he do? He said he needed irrational knowledge in order to find the meaning of life. In a sense, you have to step out of the rational in order to get life's meaning. Now, I don't like the word irrational there. It's the wrong connotation. The word is transrational. We need to go beyond the rational. And, you know, he ultimately It led him to go where human logic and reason could not take him. He had to reach out in faith, which would take him beyond the purely logical, purely rational, purely the reasonable. Reminds me of the words in 1 Corinthians 12:14. But the natural man receives not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolish unto him, neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. Foolishness. That's the word Paul uses. Okay, they are foolishness to him. And you know, think about it for a minute. God, the Creator, Jesus, comes down in human flesh, lives a sinless life, dies on the cross, going back to heaven, ministering to us in the heavenly sanctuary. Come one day, he's going to come back and raise the dead. Whoa, that's quite a story, isn't it? And yet, if you think about it, there's really nothing irrational about it, nothing illogical about it. It points instead to the fact, which shouldn't be all that surprising, that reality and the cosmos as a whole is much deeper, broader, and wider than what we could smell and feel and taste and touch, see, whatever. Let me repeat. It just points instead to the fact that reality, the cosmos, is much broader, deeper, and wider than what our senses can tell us. And you know, here's the irony. That's a very logical conclusion, is it not? Indeed, and Tolstoy came to the conclusion that in the end, reaching out in faith, reaching out beyond what this world offers, isn't really all that irrational after all. It's really the only rational thing. It's the only thing that makes sense of this world, which otherwise would end in destruction. You see, it's funny. He's singing my song here, in a sense. Look around. Everywhere in the world, we can see design, we can see purpose, we can see meaning, and yet we're supposed to believe that it's all meaningless and purposelessness. I think of that quote from Nobel laureate Steve Weinberg, who once said, "The more the universe seems comprehensible, the more pointless it seems." Okay, and I love the response. I love the response to Harvard astronomer Martha Geller to his statement. She goes, "Why should the universe have a point? What point? It's just a physical system. What point is there?" I've always been puzzled by that statement. I find that hilarious. But anyway, pointless, the entire cosmos, it makes no sense. It's unreasonable. Okay, and see, we're all part of this cosmos. I mean, we see reason, we see design, we see intention all the way through. And yet we're told that it's all in the end meaningless, purposeless. That's not logical. That's not rational. That's not reasonable. It seems that reason itself should point us to something beyond the world itself. Okay, beyond what this world itself offers. Because if this is all that there is, if this is all that we have here, then it's all ultimately meaningless, fruitless, pointless. And that just doesn't make a lick of sense when meaning and purpose and intention scream out at us from all over creation. And again, here's kind of the great irony. Tolstoy says he had to get rid of reason in order to understand life's meaning. Reason, he said, couldn't help him understand what life means. Yet the irony is that it's his reason which showing him the limits that showed him the limits of reason. It was his reason which showed him that reason alone couldn't answer life's deepest questions. And so in the end, he wound up in the same place. Faith. Faith. That's why I love the words of Paul. Behold, I shall tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruption must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible has put on incorruption, and this mortal has put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying which is written, O death, where is thy sting? O Hades, where is thy victory? What textbook is going to explain this? What textbook on logic and reason could explain this? What branch of chemistry, physics, biology, physiology can help us understand anything that's in this promise here? And yet, this is what the Bible's saying. Let's not downplay, not the irrational. There's nothing irrational in this promise. It's transrational. It's beyond rational. Christ is going to return. A trumpet will sound. The dead will be raised. The rotted, dissipated, worm food, cremated, those and nothing but ashes are going to be raised to immortality. Can you see? The point here is, the Bible is pointing to something greater, richer than we could ever know on our own. These are truths that we're not going to discover through study in the world itself. That's why they have to be told to us, revealed to us in the Word of God. Tolstoy says this. He says, man's purpose in life is to save his soul. And in order to save his soul, he must live according to God. I wouldn't express it quite like that. But he's definitely right in understanding that the only way to get meaning in this life is through God, a God who promises to take us beyond what this world in itself offers, because this world in and of itself offers nothing but the grave with worms for all eternity. And that's what the gospel's all about. That's what the Bible promise is all about. Jesus came, lived, suffered, died, was resurrected, and all through the Bible promises us over and over eternal life. Eternal life. It's not irrational. It's transrational, beyond where ration could go, where Tolstoy's rationality ultimately led him to go. Really, the only logical place to go.